you. This call is now being recorded. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning. Good afternoon to everyone. On today's PPSC PDP call on Thursday, the 7th of April, we have Alex Gakuru, Jeff Newman, James Ladle, David Maher, Paul Diaz, Rolf Knoben, Tatiana Klamsova. From staff, we have Marika Konings, Glenn de Saint-Géry, Margie Milam, and myself, Gisela Gruber. Apologies today, we have from Avery Doria and Alan Greenberg. But please also remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Jeff.
Thank you. This is Jeff Newman, the chair of the PDP work team. So welcome back, everyone. I know we've had a little bit of a hiatus since the San Francisco meeting, and so now we're getting back into it. And the first thing I want to cover on this call is a review of the timeline and then go into the comments that were received. And so just for the record, we've received a number of comments, and a summary and analysis of those comments will be out hopefully by next week. We received some initial set of comments from the registrars, but they are asking for a little additional time to kind of hone in on those comments, and they'll resubmit them hopefully by the end of this week or certainly by early next week. With respect to, is there anyone else that knows of any comments that may be coming in late on this call? Marika, do we know of any groups that have not responded, any stakeholder groups or constituencies that have not responded? Alex?
Rick, I see Alex raising his hand because indeed we haven't received anything from the NCSG amongst others.
Okay, so Alex?
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. I just wanted to report that Avery posted a message yesterday asking the group, stakeholder group, to post any comments if they have. So I do not know whether somebody is going to do that, but that message was posted to the policy group at the NCSG. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Alex. And if you find out in the next day or two if there are going to be any comments submitted, if you could just, first of all, encourage them to get it in by next week at the latest, and then also or let us know if there's not going to be any comments. Just let us know either way.
I will.
So, according to the document up on Adobe right now is the timeline that we had agreed upon back in January when we submitted it to the council. If you notice, we're pretty much on schedule, although, you know, on here, if you look at the second, there's only one page. You look at the bottom of the page, it talks about preparing the final report March 25th through April 30th, and consideration by the PPSC of the final report May 1st through June 27th. One of the things that's going to come up on the GNSO Council meeting agenda today, hopefully if there's time, is a discussion on whether this report needs to go to the PPSC or whether there's still a need for the PPSC. Right now there's we've done a lot of work on this. We've done a lot of comment periods. I'm not sure what the value of having this go up to another intermediary group will be. And in addition, if there are any issues that the council still feels like are unresolved that it wants to send to a group, there's now or will be after this council meeting today, hopefully a fully constituted standing committee that's meant to address certain issues that are referred to it by the GNSO that involve implementation issues of the recommendations. So if there are open items, they can be referred to that group if that's what needs to happen. So, again, I just want to run this by you. I'm hoping that the PPSC is disbanded, and that may give us a few more weeks then to finalize the report and submit it to council well in time for the Singapore meeting, and hopefully that'll get done and we can look towards wrapping up our work. If you look at the comments that we received, if we put that up on the – well, let me ask, actually, are there any questions on that timeline or any of those topics? And Wolf, I believe, you're on the call, right?
Yes, I am.
And so Wolf knows all about that standing committee, correct?
Not yet. We are just in the stage of drafting the charter right. For the standing committee. Tonight we will talk about that.
Right, and so Wolf is the interim chair of the drafting committee.
Yes.
Okay, so going on to the comments that we received, a lot of these comments we're going to kind of go through quickly because they're just either I concur or just basically supportive statements. What I'm also going to ask when we go through this, if there are comments that we feel that we've already discussed prior to the publication of the report, we can move more quickly through those unless anyone strongly objects. The goal right here is not to rehash any of the debates that we've had unless there's some new information that we did not have and that new information may change the outcome. So even though this is 18 pages long or something like that, I don't think that this will take us nearly as long to go through as the previous set of comments simply because of the nature of the comments. So that being said, if we want to just jump into the first set of comments, which is bylaws versus the manual, should things be in the bylaws versus the PDP manual, the comment that was pretty much shared by a number of the groups, including some comments we received in San Francisco, was that it would be helpful from an implementation point of view if we made clear in the recommendation or in the report whether the recommendation relates to the bylaws, which is Annex A, or the operating procedures or the PDP manual. So that's something I think in the next version that we send around, I think between Marika and myself and others, that we can make sure that next to each recommendation we make it clear where that recommendation would go. And anyone, feel free to raise your hand, jump in if I'm moving too quickly or not quickly enough. For streamlining the process, the ALAC supports our comments and basically has is basically a comment of support. For the INTA recommends, and I think this is a good recommendation, that we should put short titles for each of the recommendations to help readers navigate through the report. And there were suggestions provided in that submission. Anyone disagree with that? CADNA submitted a comment. This is not really a comment for anything in the report itself for us to do, but just reiterating that transparency and accountability are keys, and they're glad that we're doing a PDP review now, and the recommendations are a good step towards that. So we'll just say thank you for that comment. The BC has raised a comment that says that the report is not yet a guide for prospective participants in a PDP. The manual is helpful, but too long. A short practical manual on the PDP without references to the work team recommendation or without references to the work team or recommendation number should be developed. Marika, you have a comment?
Yeah, this is Marika, and I think on this comment it might be useful to refer to the experience with the GENESO working group guidelines, where once the guidelines were finalized, then basically a summary was developed, and that was passed back to the PPAC for review and then submitted to the council and for wider distribution. So I think it's a very valid point, but at the same time it might not be appropriate to do that yet until the whole process is approved and we have a final process in our hands, and I think on that basis it will be much easier to develop such a summary guide for the broader community.
Well, I think that's a good comment for our response, and that we make it clear in the report that the final manual, when we go back after these recommendations are adopted, then we'll have a final manual that will be much more in line with the BC comment. The extent we have time to do that before Singapore, that would be great. But I guess it wouldn't be approved by then, but if we can give them a sample of how it would look, that might give them more comfort. We'll see how we progress. The flowchart, comment on the flowchart, was that it's useful but overly complex. Simplified one per council, initiated work only as needed, showing timelines would also be useful. So Another comment from the INTA is that the chart should be included as part of the manual and advises that certain information should be included in the chart, which is the required ICANN general counsel opinion in scope, as well as the existence of an optional impact analysis showing the stage at which this optimal impact analysis enters the revised process of initiating PDP. And if I recall, I think these comments were brought up by Anne at in San Francisco as well when she got up to the mic. And I guess she's part of INTA, so I'm guessing that's why her comments got picked up in that statement. And there's another comment on the flow chart from the registries saying differentiating between the in-scope, adding the 60, in-scope is 33% of each house or 66% of one house. So I think, you know, the comments generally on the flow charts are good, that it should be included. I think we kind of put it together last minute before getting this out, so I think these are helpful suggestions, and I think we can make a number of different flow charts if we have time that indicate different paths than going into detail and trying to make a more simple one, and then people can delve into the more complex charts if they choose to. Kind of like the charts that they have for the new TLD process where it starts out with a simple process and then they break down processes. You know, you could always click on something in there and you could see a more detailed breakdown if you wanted to. We have a quiet crowd here today. Everyone still there?
Yes.
Okay. Those were all the general comments on the report and on general topics. Then from here on, we the comments are tied to the recommendations. I think there may be some more towards the end that are overarching ones. Any more comments on general? Okay. So Stefan submitted a comment on recommendation one, asking the rationale for leaving in place the what is the rationale for leaving in place the possibility for an advisory committee or the board to request an issue report? How does the work team see the GNSO Council scope? How does the work team see the GNSO Council cope with such outside influences? And I think we had this discussion before. Stefan's comments were received before San Francisco, and I think we discussed this one previously, and it was just the it was a request by the Board Governance Committee and our initial discussions that we decided not to change some of those areas. Everyone's still on the same I'll take everyone's temperature. Everyone still has the same thoughts of not really, you know, it's kind of what we were given and we decided not to change that. Anyone have any other response for Stefan? Alex?
Yeah, I think what I just wanted to raise for discussion, not really adding to change our recommendation, is maybe we become receptive to the fact that now GAC is playing a bigger role also. So supposing in future GAC wants to have what so-called outside influences, whether maybe we have catered enough or we stick by what we have, because they are going to be participating on certain work teams and work groups. They have already started, and I think a good example is the one of jazz. So maybe just to bring it to the group's attention, just in case we want to discuss. If we want to stick with this, that's okay. It's really for discussion, not a suggestion in any way whatsoever. Thanks.
Right. Well, I think realistically, I think that the only group that's really ever going to submit requests directly to us for an issue report is the ALAC. I think the GAC sees themselves, well, I know they see themselves as advising the board, and I would doubt very much that there would be any direct request by the GAC to the GNSO Council for an issue report. That said, I don't see any reason to take that out as an option for them, if nothing else for, you know, the political or the optics of it. Paul?
Thanks, Jeff. Yeah, I agree with you with regards to the GAC, and I don't think we should specifically withhold their opportunity to seek an issue report or seek some sort of policy work. I would be concerned, though, if the GAC, given its the way it participates in ICANN, look, realistically, there's no way in God's green earth any GAC member is going to be involved in the actual policy development work. And if all of a sudden we started seeing the GAC, maybe because they've been lobbied by other interests, pushing for a variety of policy initiatives, I would certainly want to see other members of the GNSO lining up and supporting that, because it would strike me as inappropriate for the GAC to start demanding all this various policy work and then not having any of its members participate in the development process. You know, we do run the possibility here, when we broadly talk about ACs, agreed, ALAC is by far the one that's going to drive things, but they participate, no problem. But we do run the possibility of creating an unintended consequence by giving GAC the opportunity to request things, but then, you know, leaving it to the rest of the community to develop with all the constraints on resources and everything else that's already been mentioned in the in our report.
Mm-hmm. I think that's right. Okay, any other comments? Okay, the next comment is on the development of the PDP manual, and it says, should not hold up policy development efforts. An interim working arrangement must be achieved by pending adoption of a final policy development process manual. So there's no... Marika, does this mean that, you know, they want us to focus on getting the recommendations out and then worry about the manual afterwards? Is that what it's trying to say, or is there some other meaning?
Yeah, this is Marika. I didn't completely understand, because I think our intention, or at least the work team's intention, was to move everything up at the same time, like, you know, to the council and to the board, noting that, of course, something like the manual, which would be part of the GNSO operating procedures, might need changes, but that is possible, or further details might be added over time. But I thought the intention of the work team was to move everything at the same time up, because they're closely connected. And at the same time, I think the manual itself actually doesn't require further approval, as that's, you know, oversight by the board, and the recommendations itself, or the new Annex A, will need to go to the board. So it's actually likely that it will be the other way around, where the manual is ready as such before it actually, the new Annex A or recommendations as such have been, reached the board level for approval. So that was my take on it.
Okay. Well, let's. So that's just something to think about. If indeed we're working on two different tracks, and it seems that the recommendations or the manual is lagging behind, but I think it's just something to keep in mind. Stefan submitted a comment saying, what use does the template have if it's not mandatory? And if it's not mandatory, they're worried about people not, you know, taking shortcuts and not filling in the template. So does anybody have any thoughts on that? Is there a change in people's thinking? Do we think the template should be mandatory? I know Alan's not on the phone, but he was one who was definitely not in favor of a mandatory template. There's other comments on here just to go through that. Padna recommends that the use of a template is mandatory. The registry says it should be flexible enough so that it can be required, and the INTA said it should be limited to defining the issue, identifying problems, and providing the rationale for investigating whether policy development is needed. If there's other elements such as supporting evidence and economic impact are desirable, these should be explored through an impact analysis. So it seems like everyone is pretty much saying that it should be required, with the exception of INTA, who's saying it depends, you know, we need to see what's in there. So it's a little bit different thinking than what we came out with in our report. So So what does everyone think on this? Should we change our recommendation to make it mandatory and then just look at the elements a little bit more carefully to make sure they're flexible enough? All right, let me make the recommendation. Okay, James?
Sorry, Jeff. I'm a little slow on the trigger there. I think that there were some of us that were in favor of making this compulsory, and then there were some of us that wanted to keep it more flexible. And I don't know that we have everyone on this call that, could maybe, I would be really reluctant to change our existing recommendation just, I don't think that we have all the voices here today.
Yeah, so let me, Marika, if for next time, can we look at the template again and just carefully and see if there's anything in there? Just retake a look at this issue and see if we can make it mandatory, but it's also flexible enough to make sure that we address the concerns that Alan has and INTA.
Okay.
James?
Yeah, sorry, just a quick follow-up. Maybe the answer is to make the, to make the issues report mandatory, but with some mandatory elements, but otherwise having other elements that would be flexible. But I know that complicates things.
No, I'm sorry, you said the issue, you mean the template. So have the template mandatory, have some mandatory questions on there, but have other questions that are made discretion or optional, or at least made more flexible, so that they can. There's a number of different ways to answer them. Is that what you're saying, basically?
Right, or they can be omitted entirely, depending on the situation. Right.
Okay, Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. I don't think that will be too difficult to set up a template like that, where you basically indicate what needs to be filled in, and I think in any event, the idea would be to leave a sufficient space there that people can add whatever information they think is helpful or relevant in relation to the request. So I think we should be able to accommodate that and indeed have some basic. And I think it's the same way with the setup of the issue report, where we discuss as well that certain elements need to be in there, but there's a lot of flexibility on other elements that might need to be added as relevant. So I think it's more a question than for the work team to define which of those elements should be required. And I think on the other elements, I think we have an idea or some. I think we already mentioned some areas, and again, that's something we can add over time as well.
Okay, so let's do that. Maybe not for next time, but make that one of the action items for after we get through these comments. We can actually start that conversation online on email anyway if we want. Okay. Issue 5, or should we say recommendation 5, policy development efforts should not be delayed while... Oh, we already said that one, didn't we? okay, recommendation 6 is comments. We got comments from both INTA and the registries, and it should say, the registries say, it would be helpful to better define what in-scope means. It's noted that some of these distinctions are made in other recommendations, but they should also be made in this recommendation as well. And INTA says it's concerned that the request for the ICANN staff manager to express an opinion as to whether the PDP should be initiated may result in delays. Also, this appears to be beyond the responsibilities of ICANN staff. Okay, let's... With the registry one, I think that comment is more of we define elsewhere what in-scope means, and maybe we just move that discussion up so that when someone's reading the report in order, they understand what we're referring to. So I don't think it's not any substantive change. INTA is making a recommendation about what's proper for ICANN staff. Anyone have any thoughts on that? Marika?
I mean, this is Marika. I think the current way, you know, what is written on the issues or report or what needs to be in there, it doesn't prevent us from stating our opinion. So in that sense, you know, I think here we're requesting it is maybe this adding something, but at the moment there's nothing preventing us from putting our views in there. And I think on previous occasions we have stated on certain issue reports where we thought it wasn't appropriate or timely or for whatever reasons to initiate a PDP. We've stated that and has been on several occasions as well ignored by the council, but that's another matter. So I'm not really sure how it wouldn't you know, fit with our responsibilities or what we're, you know, currently already doing.
Yeah, so I you know, this is one of those items that's been in the PDP since it started, since the evolution and reform process back in 2002-03. This element's been in the PDP and required from the beginning. I don't think it delays anything. I'm not sure why they think it will delay it, except it may result in additional discussion. But I don't think it's a delay. Let me ask the question. Do people on this work team, does anyone agree with the INTA comments or disagree? All right, let me try asking a different way. Does anyone believe that we should change our recommendation requiring that the ICANN staff express an opinion as to whether the PDP should be initiated? Does anyone believe we should change that recommendation? Sorry, what is it? The no means we don't think they should change that? It's like double negative.
I don't think we should change our recommendation.
Correct. Do not change, Jeff.
All right. Alex, okay.
For the record, Alex, those are things we shouldn't change.
Okay. Does anyone want to help offer a rationale just so Marika can jot it down? All right. How about James? Okay.
Yeah, you know, I think throughout this process we've gone to some lengths to ensure that staff was functioning kind of as a disinterested facilitator in the policy development process. And I think that if we get them at this early in the game, if we get them on the record, you know, the opinion on whether or not a PDP should go forward, I think it's going to have a lot of inertia in the process, and it's going to carry throughout, you know, all of the deliberations and into the recommendations. So I just don't know how you can have them express an opinion early in the process and not, you know, have that pop up throughout the life of the PDP. Don't know if that's what you're looking for, but that's kind of how I feel about it.
Well, I think that's part of it. I think, and again, I'll take off my chair hat at a personal level. I think it helps ensure the integrity of the process, and also makes it clear, you know, helps to define objectively what they believe can be accomplished through a PDP or should be accomplished, and frankly, what's in their mission. I think, as you said, they're the disinterested party, or should be a disinterested party, and you know, there's often a lot of emotion behind certain issues, and they're the ones that can be seen in the middle, hopefully, as putting an objective light on certain issues. Paul?
Thanks, Jeff. I agree with what you've said and what James said as well. You know, and I guess a couple things to note. Staff is committed to getting the issue report done within 45 days. You know, if the only thing holding up that initial report was a determination of whether this should even go forward and whatnot, you know, they would know that fairly early on and can work with counsel. I don't think that the concerns that staff is unduly going to influence that argument holds any water. I mean, look at the reality, the things, PDPs that have been initiated over the last couple of years, and, you know, the one that always just sticks in my craw was the whole fast flux one. you know, it was a PDP that never should have happened. It got through the process with the bare minimum of support. Staff and most of the people on GNSO who were against it kept talking about, you know, it's not an ICANN issue, there's no data, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. To have had staff, they did say in their issue report that they didn't think that there was enough information to move forward and questioned the scope and all the rest, yet it still went. I think it's very important that staff has the ability and is looked to provide impartial assessment about whether or not this makes sense as policy work. And I feel that the criticisms of staff may unduly influence the policy process are misplaced in this case.
Okay. And Alan has just joined. Alan, how are you feeling?
Better than yesterday.
Oh, good, good. We are on, right now we're on page, we're at the bottom of page 4 on recommendation, we're just talking about recommendation 6 and the comments that we received on it. And the group has agreed that we should keep in the recommendation that staff provide its opinion as to whether the PDP should be initiated. We were talking about the INTA comment that we received.
Okay, thank you.
So we're jumping now to issues. So, Marika, you have what you need as far as the rationale?
Yes, I'll write something up, and of course, everyone is free to edit or provide suggestions when I send it out.
Okay. I'm going to take the next two comments, the next two recommendations, 10 and 11, together because they're sort of interrelated, and then we can discuss those. So the BC has raised a comment on, the INTA has raised a comment that they agree the maximum time frame for the creation of a preliminary issues report should be 45. It should allow for exceptions for an additional 30 days to ensure that requests are addressed in a timely manner. The BC states that they're concerned about the report being over-engineered. This is a preliminary issue report. They say it's intended to be short and factual, not solving or adding opinion on its merit. An additional public comment period at this stage is redundant and a waste of time. INTA says that... They agree to be posted for public comment. Would recommend a short comment window to ensure that the initiation of the PDP is not delayed. And CADNIS supports the recommendation as it will incorporate, will allow critical public input sooner in the process. So it seems like there's general support except from the BC. There's support, I should say, from the IP groups and the... And CADNA. What do people think? I mean, I'll kind of pick off my hat and, on a personal level, I do think that a preliminary issues report that has a comment period is a good idea. It's, in fact, something that I'm advocating for the UDRP work that's going on now, and I don't think there's too much resistance to that. But let me open up the floor to make sure everyone still agrees that a preliminary issue report with a public comment period is a good idea, and then we'll address some of the more specifics. Alan?
Thank you. By the way, I think it's important when we talk about this that it is a preliminary issue report, not a preliminary issue report. It's not an early version of it, which is going to be expanded. Because some people are talking about it as it being, it should just be a very brief one because it's just the preliminary version. My understanding is it is the one that the staff thinks is the final one if no comments were to come in. And maybe we need to make that clear. In terms of the substance, I may be one of the people who requested this in that at the very least the requester of the issue report must be in a position to comment and say whether it really addressed the issues that were being requested. In line with standard ICANN practice, that evolved and grew into a full comment period. I don't think we can have a new set of procedures which omit the first part. and therefore I think it's the norm that it be a full comment period. But under no conditions, I think, can we eliminate the concept altogether, including comments from the originator of the request. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Alan. John?
Hey, good morning, Jeff. So speaking on behalf, I think, of the BC, the thinking was that the preliminary issue report, having a comment period on that, essentially allowed the same comments to be filed separate times. And so the thinking was, why do we need to have a comment period twice if the subject matter on which it's being the comments being made is the same? So within the BC, there was a thought that we could accelerate the process a bit by focusing the comment on a single period, which would not nothing would be slipping through uninvestigated, but it would just merely make it a single bite at the apple rather than two.
So, John, can you? So, what are the two comment periods?
Well, there's a preliminary issue report, which is the product, the work product of the team of the group. Yes.
The issue reports right now are drafted by ICANN staff alone.
Right. So there's a preliminary issue report, which then leads to an issue report.
Right, but there is no comment period right now between an issue report and the council voting on it. So if you don't have the preliminary issue report and you don't have a comment period after that, there is no comment period before PDP is launched. Someone jump in if I'm wrong about that. Right, Marika?
You're correct.
Right.
That's
so
correct.
All right, John,
I will carry that back to the BC then, because I think there was a misunderstanding.
Okay.
There's a required comment period soon after initiation.
Hold on a second. Let's do one at a time. So, John, finish up, and then Alan.
No, go ahead, Alan. I'm done.
Yeah, no, I was just saying there is a required comment period soon after initiation, but not before, as far as I know.
Right. So the goal here was to make sure that ICANN staff got it right, that the issue is adequately described. In the case that Alan was talking about, if it's ALAC, for example, that asked for an issue report, that it would be ALAC would get a chance to look at it before it got submitted to the council. Or if it was a group that requested an issue report, that they could look at it, make sure it adequately reflects the issue as they believe it before it gets submitted to the council to have a vote on it. Let me go to Alex and then back to Alan, I guess.
Yes. Alex speaking. I think I'll hold back the two comments I had because John has said he has taken the issue back to BC for them to discuss. The only thing I would want maybe us to clarify is whether it's an issue or issues report, as was raised by Alan, so that we are clear. We are discussing on the preliminary issues report or not an issue report, so that we are clear. Thanks.
Yeah, I think that is an important distinction, and I think that should be made clear. I'm going to go to Marika, and then Marika, do you understand that last comment?
Sorry, what did you say?
So the last comment was, and kind of dovetails on what Alan had said, which is that we need to make it clear that the preliminary issue report is it's what ICANN staff considers to be the actual issue report that's put out for comment. It's not meant to be an outline or it's not meant to be a non-final type product. It needs to be understood that if there are no comments received to the issue report, then that's going to be the final one that's submitted to the council.
Right, and the comment I wanted to make as well, and I think we have highlighted in the recommendation, but maybe it's something to call out even more, that this comment period is really intended to get input on the issues report itself to see if we missed anything, if there's something that's there that's incorrect, and also to provide the council with input on whether they should initiate or not a PDP. I think we should really highlight that this is not the idea here to, in that comment period, to talk about solutions or, you know, what needs to be done to address the issues, but that this is really a focused comment period on the issue report itself and see if indeed anything was missed and possible advice to the council. So I think, you know, we've highlighted in the recommendation, but maybe we need to even make it more clear what this comment period intends to do. And again, then as well, indeed highlight that the preliminary issue report is what staff considers, you know, their best effort in you know, scoping out this issue and hopefully in most cases, you know, we would get the most information and no need to make any additional changes.
Okay. Margie, and then I'll go back to Alan.
Yeah, this is Margie. I agree with that. And in drafting the UDRP thing, that's what I'm intending to do, have it be the you know, what we consider the final thing. Once we get the public comments, that might, you know, lead to some changes, or if there are also changes that happen between the publication and, you know, and the time that we produce the final, just to, in case something would happen outside of the public comment period, we might incorporate that as well. But the idea is it's certainly not an outline, at least what I'm working on right now for the UDRP.
Okay, good. John, did you have a, was that leftover hand? Okay, Alan?
Yes, it is leftover, sorry.
Okay, Alan?
Yeah, when I put my hand up, it was just to perhaps rephrase what we're doing for John's benefit to take back to the BC. Essentially what the recommendation is saying is we don't want council to vote on the wrong issue to commence or to not commence a PDP, that it should be working with as close to a version as possible that does reflect what the original concern is. And that's the, you know, the substance of it. Thank you.
Okay, so the action item then is for John to go back to the BC, discuss it with them, and make sure that it was not just kind of a misunderstanding, and then to come back for the next call or through email to address that. If we jump forward then to the workshops, the role of workshops, we got three comments on that. Basically, the BC comments that it says a workshop should not be mandatory. The INTA says that work team should clarify that it's optional but not required. And Stefan made a comment saying, you know, how does it determine which issues require a workshop and which don't? Marika, can you remind us, what do we say in the report it's mandatory?
This is Marika. No, we actually say that the PDP working recognizes the value of workshops on substantive issues prior to the initiation of a PDP. It is therefore recommending that information on the potential role of workshops and information gathering events be provided in the PDP manual. In addition, the PDP working recommends that the GDSO Council should consider requiring such a workshop online or face-to-face on a specific issue during the planning and initiation phase for a specific issue. Furthermore, the PDP working recommends that invitations and/or announcements for workshops are communicated as broadly as possible.
So, I mean, it sounds like we're all on the same page. It's just we need an extra sentence to, you know, to be clear. We're not saying this is mandatory, but in general is a good idea. You know, essentially that's the concept. Alan?
Yeah, it may be worth noting that in the past, I can't remember any case where there was not at least one workshop prior to the initiation phase. That it has become practice, whether we mandate it or not. So,
yeah, I think that's worth pointing out. James agreed, I think that's how we'll respond to that. Marika?
Yeah. This is Marika. Maybe something that we can clarify, because in the sentence where we talk about that, you know, we recommend that the GDSO Council should consider requiring such a workshop, maybe if we add something like on certain issues, just to make clear that indeed it's not a general statement we're making for every issue there should be a workshop, but, you know, to make it more clear that what we're actually saying, that we think it's in most cases probably a good idea, but not necessarily in all.
Yep, I think that's right. Okay, any other comments on that?
Yeah, a quick one. Just to clarify what Marika just said, I think what we were recommending is the GNSO may require that the working group hold a workshop. What we meant?
No, because there is no working group yet.
Well,
right, this is prior to the initiation.
Okay, because I was confused when excuse me. When we talk about specific ones, so it may be prior to initiation. Okay, I'll back out. Let's leave it alone.
Okay. Marika, you have another comment?
Yeah, it is, Marika. So it doesn't be specifically relates to prior to initiating a PDP, and I think it's something, for example, that we're considering now in the context of the UDRP, where we're saying, well, maybe it's a good idea to have that workshop either to help, you know, scope out the issue as part of the issue report, or it might be as well a case after the issue report is published, and, you know, maybe staff says, like, well, we think some further discussion is required or more input needed, that the council may say, well, maybe we need to have a workshop or some kind of a meeting in which we can discuss the issues on the table and get community input before we actually decide on whether or not to initiate a PDP. I think that's the objective mention of the workshop.
Yep, and the discussion focuses not on what the solutions are, but just what are the different issues and sub-issues within there to kind of, I think of it almost in terms of, if people remember way back, I don't even remember where in the world we were, but when this work team started, we had a very initial discussion of pretty much, you know, everyone just tell us what you think the issues are with the PDP and what issues we're going to have to address. And then we took that list that we got out of that meeting and then we created the five stages. I mean, it just helped organize the thoughts. We didn't really discuss what the answers were to any of those questions, but got out there, you know, all the issues like time frames. And, you know, everything we're discussing now is really a result of that very first workshop meeting we had, and I think that's kind of that was very helpful in organizing our work. It's also helpful, I believe, at a preliminary stage, even before the council votes on whether to initiate the PDP. So moving on to the next set of comments are all on impact analysis, and if you recall, this is where we had said that a impact analysis may be requested, and it's not mandatory, but it was a may, and it talked about, this is where Avery had the footnote in there about including the term human rights. What we did there is an impact analysis on and used the elements of the words from the affirmation of commitments. The registry said that we needed to define public interest and consumer trust. Any analysis of competition should be performed by qualified competition authorities. Analysis of human rights should also be based on international principles of law. The INTA said we need to clarify that the GNSO Council may consider an impact analysis, but that is not required. INTA requests, therefore, the deletion of or necessary. So those are the two words we would take out. With respect to the elements of impact analysis, intends to be opinion that human rights is included in the category of the public interest. The BC said that a possible impact analysis before a vote to start a PDP, or it's possible that it would be gained, and they don't want it to cause a delay. And in San Francisco, the comment came out that, you know, who would undertake the assessment, and are human rights really a part of ICANN's mission? So a couple things from these set of comments. Number one is, again, I think we need to do a good job in saying that it's not mandatory, that it's not meant to delay the PDP process, and it's not meant as a tool to game the system. So we need to make that clear. I think with respect to public interest and consumer trust, I think we should make it clear again. I think we did, but just to make it clear that it comes from the affirmation of commitments and that it's not, we understand that there may be work undertaken by, to define what consumer trust is, but I don't think we're in a position, and maybe that's an element of work for future, but I don't really think it's incumbent upon this team to actually define those terms. think it would be an impossible exercise for us to do that. But anyone disagree with that? Hearing no comments. Marika?
This is Marika. More, you know, because reading the recommendation itself, it talks about it in a very broad way, and I do understand that, you know, the concern that some have that this might be used as a, you know, gaming option, and partly as well, of course, a challenge if you're still at the issue request phase. You know, how do you assess any impact of the issue itself? Isn't it more, you know, the solution that you want to have the impact assessment on? So I'm wondering if this is one of the areas where, for example, the issue report could also make a recommendation, either, you know, staff or as part of the public comment, where people could say, well, you know, we actually do think more research needs to be done and the impact needs to be assessed on this or that as part of the consideration of whether, you know, a PDP needs to be initiated. I don't know if that's a better gating way of saying, okay, as it's, if, you know, either our staff raises it or if it's part of the public comments, that is when, you know, the council should consider this, but it shouldn't be a factor of, you know, someone just saying, oh, hey, let's do a impact assessment on this or the other without any supporting information or support behind it. I'm wondering if that's something that you know, the work team could consider.
So I'm going to, James, you're still on?
Yeah, I'm here. I just stepped away from the keyboard a second.
Okay, that's fine. So we're talking about the impact analysis, and do you have, this was one of the, you felt very strongly about this, about having an impact analysis done if it's recommended, you know, because there is a number of, you had talked about a number of potential subjects that would be in an issue report that would have large or that could have potentially large impacts on certain of the providers or certain different groups. And so do you have any thoughts on any of these comments about, you know, you had also provided the language on or the recommendation that we use the affirmation of commitments language. Do you have any thoughts on comments?
Well, I mean, I'm testing my memory a little bit because I think that we were going through some of the we were going through the AOC with a fine-tooth comb when this topic came up. So I think that's probably where we were looking at how the policy development process, you know, impacts these areas that are part of the affirmation. So, you know, reading through these comments, I was just kind of, I apologize, I just kind of glanced through them real quickly last night. But, you know, I think that if we want to make the impact analysis optional but not mandatory, then I think that the council has to make that determination. I don't think that we can leave that to the working group or the members of the working group where, you know how the ICANN MO is that if one person asks for it, then suddenly it's mandatory. So I think that, you know, if that determination is coming from the council, that an impact analysis for this particular PDP is issued, then I think that we should, you know, give council that prerogative. And I do agree that, and I think we've said all along that human rights is either out of scope or folded into public interest, that it doesn't need to be teased out separately. So, I mean, that's just my general take on these comments. I don't know if that helps.
Yeah, and to clarify, this is before there's actually a working group, so anything would have to, the request would have to, by definition, come from the council, and I guess
right.
It would go through the normal council vote, which would be a majority of each house.
Well, then who is making the impact analysis? Staff?
Well, so that's, and I think that's some of staff, I think, might be confused about this, too, because you're trying to figure out what you're doing an impact analysis on. I know Merrill and Cade actually brought impact analysis up very early on, and it is a confusing topic because, you know, you don't want to be solutioning as part of the issue report, right? You don't want to say, well, if this is the solution, this is the impact, because you haven't even started the work yet. So
Right, but you know, you also don't want to start off down the course of a PDP that is known or is least suspected to run counter to, you know, the commitments in the AOC.
Right, so we need to do kind of a good job in clarifying exactly what we mean and when we mean it, because I think there's some confusion. Let me go to Alex and then Alan, and then we'll come back.
Thank you, Jeff. Alex speaking. I'm inclined to go towards what you as a chair had suggested, that we leave out the definition because and leave it up to the council, so we don't make it mandatory. Because if we do, as we define everything on impact analysis, then obviously because of my stakeholder group, we'll also insist, as Avery had put it, on definition of human rights. And so the more we leave that to council, I think it will be better, so we don't go into defining it. Thank you.
Okay. And Alan?
Yeah, I don't have the words of the original recommendation in front of me. I'm presuming that we're talking about an impact analysis of the issue, not of the possible outcomes. So I think it's important because there's been, you know, comment on impact analysis on the impact on contracted parties or something like that. And that's likely to be the impact on the potential outcomes, which is not what we're talking about here.
So can you give an example of what, even if hypothetical, what you think this impact, how it will be used?
I'm not one of the people who suggested that we need it. I think it's more likely to be used as a delaying tactic than as a real tool. And there are certainly issues. I mean, if you look at the PDP the council did on new GTLDs, could we have done an impact analysis of either having new GTLDs or not having new GTLDs, or the lack of having more GTLDs? I don't think we could have. There are some issues reported, some subjects to PDPs that I just don't think lend themselves to an impact analysis of the prior condition. So I'm one of the people who said I'm not sure this. It certainly shouldn't be mandatory and has to be left to discretion. But it needs to be made clear we're talking about impact of the situation prior to the PDP, as opposed to the outcomes. And it may already make that clear. I'm not sure.
Okay. No, I'm not sure it's as clear as you said it. So that's definitely worth clarifying. Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. I'm still struggling as well with this concept, and my question is for James. You know, maybe he can provide an example, because how can an issue itself, you know, run counter to, for example, the AOC? Is it more when you're actually talking about, you know, potential solutions and ways of addressing a certain issue, that that's where you want to do the impact assessment? So I'm just wondering if there's a kind of example you have in mind, you know, what kind of issue. I can understand further research and seeing indeed how, if an issue is really existing, and if you're saying we need more research to really see if it is really affecting, you know, enough people to warrant policy development. But on an impact assessment, I'm still not clear what that would mean and what you would investigate.
Jeff, is that a question?
Yep.
You want me to respond?
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
So I'm actually pulling up to some of the final report now, the ATRC final report, because I think there were some recommendations in there that directly touched on some of the work that the PPSC, this group, the PSC PDP, was doing, and vice versa. And I think there's some overlap there, and I apologize, I'm reading while we're talking, and I know that that's usually a recipe for non sequiturs here, I think that there were several points during our work that it seemed that we wanted to, or at least I felt that it was valuable to ensure that what we were doing, and maybe this is more a question, not necessarily of an impact analysis, Jeff, but more of a question of scope, okay? We wanted to ensure that the remit to address a particular issue that was coming up for a PDP followed the, you could draw a straight line from the AOC through the bylaws and through the the GNSO from you know, whatever that issue was. You could say that it lines up with all of those documents, all those frameworks, and that if something, you know, was out of whack, and I think that perhaps Paul's example earlier of the FastFlux working group perhaps might have been an example where something could have been caught earlier in that process and say, wait a second, not only are we not sure if it's ICANN's role to address this, but we're not even sure that any policy that comes out of this would be effective at addressing this issue. I think that if we can put some sort of a check or test earlier in the process, we might and we might alleviate a lot of those questions down the road. So I think that's the idea behind this, or the thinking behind this impact analysis. And I think Alan is correct that it is not about presuming the possible outcomes of a policy development. It's much more about just looking at the issue itself and ensuring that it lines up with everything from the AOC on down.
So is this more kind of instead of an impact analysis, it's more, you know, kind of an assessing the scope?
Well, yeah, I mean, now that I think about it, it's probably more of a scope sanity check, or, you know, whatever we want to call it. But it you know, it almost is, I think, Jeff, and help me here because you're a lawyer, it's almost like a jurisdictional test, right?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I think another part that came up in my mind, you know, it's something that's been floated. You know, some people think there should be a PDP on whether registries should be required to have a thick who is.
Right.
And this was discussed during the weekend sessions in San Francisco, and I raised the point that I didn't want a PDP done on that simply because there's only one registry that doesn't have thick who is. Two TLDs, but it's only one registry operator. And to do a full PDP, the comment I had raised was that it's just a waste of resources. You know, that the you'd basically be doing this for the benefit of forcing one registry to adopt it. And I said, you know, before council votes on initiating a PDP on it, talk to that one registry and see if they have any plans to do it, you know, or, you know, what their thinking is on the subject, to try to work it outside the PDP process if they could. That was one of the items that I had thought about as far as kind of a scope assessment as opposed to more an impact of result. Alan?
Thank you. Yeah, I like the kind of description that James has put on it now much more than calling it an impact analysis. And I think we're talking about something quite different here. If nothing else, reading the registry comments on the impact analysis implies that an impact analysis, if we have to go to, you know, reigning authorities on the subject, would be both a very time-consuming and slow process and expensive process. And I don't think that was our intent when we originally put it there. So I think the kind of things we're talking about now make a lot of sense. I think we're going to have to go back and come up with some words that are quite different from what we have right now. It does make some sense to make sure that council has the ability to do some level of analysis, because the absence of our comment of anything on our part, it will be viewed, I think, the council must vote and they don't have the discretion to go off in a sideline and do something like this. So us allowing it to be done gives them the discretion to do it, and I think the wording we're talking about now is much closer to something that makes sense than the impact analysis term. Thank you.
Okay, so I think all of that makes sense. I think clarifying that whatever we call it, whatever it is not mandatory, but it's at the request of the council. Make sure it's not a delay tactic, and then further refining this thing to call it something more as a scope assessment or a sanity check, as James had described it, and Alan concurred. I think let's take that back. Let's see if we can work on that. Marika, you have what you need to kind of just work on some sort of suggestion to that?
Yes, I do.
Okay. And we'll just, if you want, we can throw that out to the group on email and see if people will respond to that prior to the next call. Okay, and make sure, and also, yeah, as James put on the comment on the chat, we need to make it clear that it's focusing on assessing the issue and not the presumed outcome. Okay, so recommendation 14 is on resource and prioritization. Stefan says, how should resources be measured and how can the availability be determined, noting that there is currently no mechanism in place for the GSO Council to do it. And the comment from INTA is, if we have specific guidelines for the Council to refer to in connection with prioritization, then it would be helpful to state those guidelines specifically in the final report. James?
Hi, Jeff. So I know we've got some counselors on the call, and I'm probably going to ruffle some feathers by saying this, but I think it echoes something, a comment I made in San Francisco, which is that I understand that resources and prioritization and, you know, the fact that we're capping every staff member and every volunteer work hour that we can possibly scrounge up for everything that's currently on our plate. I understand it's a problem, and I understand it's kind of an underlying concern of everything that ICANN and the GNSO is doing right now. But respectfully, I don't believe it's the job of this group necessarily, and definitely not the job of individual PDP working groups to set council priorities, you know, or community priorities. I think that that has to be done at the council level, you know, whether or not recommendations can be prioritized, you know, have some sort of natural priority to them by basis of which ones have more consensus, which ones have less consensus. I mean, there's something to be said for that, but I think that ultimately, you know, it goes to the council to, you know, to make these decisions and to say that we're going to pursue X and not, you know, and we're going to table Y for the time being. And I don't know. I just see a reluctance to do that. Not a reluctance to try to do that, just a reluctance to actually do that.
So Marika, on that recommendation, do you have that in front of you as to what we actually say in there?
Yes. If you give me 1 second.
And while you're pulling that up, let me, Alan, you have a comment?
Yeah, as busy as council and council members and GNSO members are, I don't think it's due to PDPs. And I think we need to put a statistic in there. My guess is we don't initiate on the average more than 2 PDPs a year. Maybe it's 3, but I suspect not. We have those kind of numbers, and it may be worth quoting them. So we may be busy, but it's not due to PDPs. And I think it's important to say that. And PDPs are the reason the council exists. So, you know, if the council deems something to be worthy of PDP, by definition, it is high priority. And there just aren't enough of them to be agonizing over it. We're spending all of our time, certainly in the last couple of years, on things like this and other things which are not PDP processes. Thank you.
Yeah, I think so, Alan. That's an excellent point, and I think that is certainly worth pointing out that, you know, we're really talking about a very specific type of action, that this is only relates to PDPs, and so I do think that's key. Maybe some stats thrown in there. I also think James's point is right, that it's really a council exercise that they have to do. It's not really up to the person who's requesting the issue to think about prioritization, or even ICANN staff necessarily to think about prioritization. You know, staff should point out in the issue report what resources they think are needed to do the PDP, but not make any determination as to where it fits in on the priority. Marika, do you have that provision now?
Yes, I do. Basically, what we say is Recommendation 14, the PDP Working believes that the GNSO Council should take into full account the resources available, both volunteers from the community as well as ICANN staff, on making its decision on whether or not to initiate a PDP.
Okay, and from what I'm hearing, it's basically, it doesn't seem like there's a desire from people in this group to actually provide any more criteria on that.
I would add
you know, taking into account that, you know, we don't do, not this word, but, you know, not this wording, but, you know, taking into account the fact that we don't do many of them, and PDPs are why the council exists to a large extent.
You know, the irony, however, is that in order to initiate a PDP, it's a much lower threshold than to initiate any other action by council.
And isn't it interesting that we do so few of them anyway?
Yeah. It's interesting why people don't go down the PDP route when, in theory, it's easier to initiate than everything else. But I think we should make those points about, you know, that these are PDPs. This is what, you know, a lot of the substantive policy work that the council does, and that it's really a job for the council to ensure that the proper resources are in place, and it's not really up to the requester to provide that. So I think what we're saying is our statements stay as is, and that we don't really have any other guidelines to provide, but provide the context that Alan was talking about. And Marika just posted that she's back. So, Marika, how much of that did you miss?
I'm not sure. What I have down is that it's not the role of working group work teams to set priorities for the council or communities, the role of the council. I think Alan noted that there are not that many PDPs, and they're not the ones taking up the resources, and that the PDP is the reason why the council exists.
Yeah, I mean, I would do it in a little bit more positive tone as far as, you wouldn't say it's our job. I mean, we wouldn't say it's not our job. We basically say that, you know, we believe this is the job of the GNSO Council, to, you know, word it much more positively. But, yes, that's the point.
These are just my notes. When I write it up, it will sound much better.
I'm sure it will. Let me just jump to, we'll finish the fast track, and then that's where we'll end it, because I think we're a third of the way done with this document, so I think that's really good. On the fast track, which I believe in this recommendation, we I think we just punted this issue, right? Basically said that this might be something that's more for the standing committee to think about. What do we say on this? Maybe I'm wrong. Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. I think the element that they're referring to is that we do say in that recommendation that that we're of the view that a new PDP will offer additional flexibility and would allow for faster PDPs, provided that the necessary resources are available without the need for a formal fast-track process. We do say something in the beginning as well, but I think that's what they're referring to in saying, why do you think it will be faster if actually, you know, the only thing we see in the overall process is that you're adding, you know, additional time and more time for scoping and discussion. So where do you actually see that it will go faster? We actually see the opposite, that it actually might be slower.
Okay. Does anyone have thoughts on that? People agree with that comment?
It's Alan. I'm not at the computer right now. I think, yes, it may well slow. You know, what we've done may well slow some things down, but it's a solider process, I think. So if it does, so be it. In terms of a fast pass, we talked about it a lot. We couldn't come up with any specific recommendations, and I don't think we should delay the whole report trying to refine that. So leaving it open, I think, is a good thing. You know, and we could add a sentence saying, if council decides that you know, a fast path is required after some experience with the new PDP rules, they can always charter a group to look at it.
Right, I think so. I think that's an important point. I think you know, what we did say is that once you initiate the PDP, because there should be a better informed PDP, a more narrow or proper scope of a PDP with the issues report, with the requirements of the charter, getting approved, and with all the pre-work that's being done, it may slow everything down from the time that you know, an idea for a PDP is conceived, but it certainly should help shorten the time once the PDP is initiated, I think was the goal. And plus, we provide for these, you know, we couldn't agree as a group on anything to eliminate from the process. We didn't come to any kind of consensus on steps that didn't need to be taken. And so what we did, though, is provide flexibility for those steps to be taken on a quicker path if that's what the group desires to do. But I think your points, Alan, are well taken as well, that if you know, we need some experience with this, it could go either way. But you know, and if in the future council sees a need for a faster path, they can always commission a group to do it. But this group felt pretty strongly, or at least didn't feel by any kind of consensus, that there was any steps that could be eliminated. James?
Yeah, Jeff, you know, I think you covered some of the things I wanted to raise, but I think the response to this comment is that we didn't, you know, slow down the process. What we may have done is front-loaded the process a little bit so that we're, based on our, you know, all of us, we've have some experience now with PDPs. We know what slows them down once they've started. So if we can get some of that work specified and established up front in the issues report, in the initiation, and in the first couple of required steps in the PDP process, then perhaps, you know, we can eliminate some of the steps that tend to bog PDPs down. So I think that the response here is by having a narrower scope, or let's say a more defined scope, and by having and also by clarifying which steps are optional, which steps are required, like workshops and initial comment periods, I think that we're saying that we've moved a lot of the, you know, let's call it grunt work, you know, of a PDP up to the beginning of the process so it doesn't bog down en route.
I think those are good responses. I think you're right on as far as the front loading and making sure the issues are scoped out. And then Alan's got some. Alan, are your comments on? I just noticed these on the chat. Perhaps James, but I suspect that may be a good thing.
No, I think Alan and I are still continuing. Yeah, we're still having a conversation about another side.
Oh, okay. Sorry. All right, Tamuki, you got all those comments from James?
Yes.
All right, so I think this is a logical place to stop. We're a third of the way done with these comments. If we could make this much progress next time, that would be great. We have a call on I'm going to read James's comment. It says, Alan, let's see if we can get Jeff to read this into the record. So you won that bet. Anyway, we have a call next Thursday, and then we can decide next Thursday whether hopefully by then we'll have some guidance on where we think the council will go with the PPSB and figure out an updated timeline. So next Thursday, same time, same place, probably the same phone number. I will talk to you all then.
Thanks, Jeff. Lots of good progress today.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
Yeah, thank you, Jeff.
Okay, bye.
Bye.